All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Well, welcome to John Bowd's All the Rage. John Bowd with myself. Second week in a row we've actually talked about things, because there's things to talk about. This week, I did see this article, John, the Italian trade union are boycotting a ship heading to Saudi Arabia, the milkshake drama, and the UN report on poverty. And also, if we've got time, John, you mentioned Alabama Free's singer. Who was that again?
The very Reverend Dwayne Love, who I'd like to pay a brief tribute to at the end. Just a couple of paragraphs. He's an interesting fella, and very much in the spirit of this show, I think.
Alabama Free, didn't they do the Sopranos song?
Yeah, they did the theme tune, also known as Woke Up This Morning.
Yes, fantastic.
Which is a great tune. I saw them live a good few times. They are a very, very entertaining band. And they had a very good ethos, which is one of the reasons why I think he's worth paying tribute to. Very sad to hear of his death, actually. Seems very early to me.
Yeah, I've never actually seen... I must check out the producers, the Soprano producers' interviews and stuff, because be interesting to see why he picked that song. But John, take it away.
Thanks, mate. Okay, so as you mentioned, we've got quite a jam-packed show this week, because quite a lot has happened this week. However, we don't have time to cover it all. So unfortunately, my new TV news feed seems to be telling me right now is the collapse of British Steel. That needs to be gone into a bit of detail. But a lot of people are commenting on that at the moment, so perhaps we should wait a few days for it to see what's going to go on. And then we can make a comment on it. We've also got a little bit more on the European elections. We still have the issue of the attempts to basically make abortion illegal in America, which is always important no matter what, because this is a very internationalist show. But also, you know, this is Britain, so where America leads, we tend to follow. So we need to look at that. But to begin with, I think we're going to... we'll have a little bit of a milkshake update, shall we? So, Kyle of Swindon, as he's also known to us, got milkshaked this week, along with Nigel Farage, whose security didn't seem too bothered about preventing it from happening. I wonder why. Well, James Goddard did not get milkshaked, because that's how low worth he is. He did, however, get chased by the good people of Liverpool after describing their great city as a shithole. Shout out and solidarity to the people of Liverpool. Now, what I want to focus on more, however, is the reaction that we've had to this minor activity from our good friends in the centrist bloc, or whatever they want to call themselves. The people responsible for keeping the world so well balanced and lovely for 20-odd years, when no one suffered or had need for working-class identity or any of those old-fashioned such things. Yes, when everything was just so wonderful, that pre-2016 period. The Lib Dems came out and said that they couldn't condone this for some reason. What an absolutely pathetic gaggle those little bitches are. And Tony fucking Blair, of all people, carped on about throwing milkshakes at fascists being a bad sign of modern politics, says the man who gave us the Iraq War. This is so weak and pathetic, it doesn't really warrant much of a response, but I'm being charitable, so I will do, because there are a couple of things I want to say. Firstly, we're seeing elements of our old friend, moral equivalence rear its ugly head. Farage and his supporters made reference to Jo Cox and her brutal murder, as if there is an equivalence in getting covered in cheap milkshake. This is a really disgusting comparison, and worthy of a milk drenching in itself, at the very least. Nasty Nigel has talked about taking up arms. He wouldn't, by the way, if Brexit didn't happen. And claimed that the EU referendum took place without violence 3 days after Jo Cox was brutally murdered by one of his side. Secondly, while the middle class and wannabes sitting around defending the rights of fascists to speak, Muslim people, Jewish people, LGBT people and immigrants have seen an increase in attacks, threats and intolerance against them, while you pathetic fucksticks have sat indoors playing political parlour games. You are not good enough for the modern political world, much of which you've contributed to making, for many reasons, and one being that you don't take any of it seriously enough because you have no involvement. You've got no nothing to lose with this situation. Fascism is becoming normalised, which is one thing above all other things that it must never be allowed to do. It's become to the centre with the liberal norms of decorum and practice are what have allowed this to happen, coupled with an unwillingness to fight. They are all directly responsible for this. Exposing this enemy does not work because nobody cares about the truth anymore. You can be factually accurate and right about everything that you fight against these people, and it's not going to make a blind bit of difference. No one cares. Okay, they just want their side to win, and they'll attack whoever they see as a threat to a life that they have never lived, but they feel cheated out of. Thankfully, I should be thankful, frankly, that milkshake's the only thing that's being thrown and not bricks, because violence against fascists and the extreme threat that they represent is not the same as any other kind, because everything about fascism and the far right is a threat, mainly a threat of violence. By declaring, for instance, that you intend to have a march against Islam, you are stating a willingness, if not intention, to commit violence, up to and impossibly including the removal of a population from a nation state. You are a thug, and thugs get what they give, so you'd better get good at ducking. You really should just be thankful it is only a milkshake. I mean, when Carl of Swindon talks about raping female Labour MPs that he doesn't like, the very least he can get is a McDonald's large strawberry. The fact is that the middle class don't have a problem, or very little problem, with the far right, because they are unlikely to come for you. And they're likely to protect your money too, so it's fine. They have constantly attacked the working class and the left wing, particularly trade unions, over many years, from going back to Nazi days onwards, if not before. They did do it before, now I think about it. They've always been the people who are backed by profit, act in the name of profit, and protect those who have more money and more social capital than the rest of us. It's not a working class movement. It never has been. You're not friends. The middle class are not friends of us, and they never have been. You try to rewrite history to your advantage. You steal and water down culture because you can't create anything yourself, and you marginalise the rest of us in the process. As we said last week to our British listeners, tomorrow is voting day in the EU elections, and you have a choice. You can have a choice for childish nihilism and hate, or you can choose hope that will politically empower us all to take over from our masters. You can forget any of the shit that's coming from the Brexit lot about working class communities. This was never a working class project. From the Tories through UKIP and onto Farage's latest attempt to get attention, they are all hardcore privateers and profiteers. If you vote for them, you will lose your hospital. If you vote for them, you will lose welfare aid. You will lose any community that you have left, and you will not be able to blame Johnny Foreigner for it this time. Laura Pidcock, Labour MP, tweeted something on the 20th, which I thought was worth repeating. The far right, however they brand themselves, do not have any of the answers to society's ills. What they do is jump on issues in order to divide working class communities. You have a chance to reject that division and hatred if you get out and vote for UK Labour on Thursday, May the 23rd. I back Miss Pidcock all the way. Farage is presently being investigated for his many dodgy money sources and for caning too much from his EU expenses, an organisation that he claims to hate, that he claims to hate. So don't give me any of your man of the people bollocks. We've also got photos of him, which I believe you tweeted, Dave, of him marching with the National Front when he was around 16 or so. So clearly his politics haven't changed much. You want to add anything on that particular issue?
John. I don't know if I remember a film written by Stephen King, where a guy, if he shakes your hand, and then he can see Twilight something.
The Dead Zone.
The Dead Zone.
Yeah, great film with Christopher Walken and Martin Sheen.
Yeah, and the character Martin Sheen plays. I don't know if you've got to watch the film and then tell me that there isn't some comparisons there.
yeah, you're absolutely right.
That's the same thing. It's very dangerous. I'm not saying we should play it safe and have safe politicians. I'm just saying he's dangerous. I'm telling you, he's dangerous.
Well, worst of all, though, mate, that he's dangerous for something that's not going to affect the likes of him. That's my entire point. Not only do these people lack any responsibility for their words, which lead to actions, but it's never, ever brought back to them, and it's never brought back. I mean, seriously, you know, the idea that there's some terrible crime against the sanctity of British politics is being committed by you having a milkshake lobbed at you is just pathetic. You know, even today, we've seen Joe Cox murdered. We've seen a man put in prison last week for threatening to murder another Labour MP. We've seen Jeremy Corbyn has been physically attacked. We had Darren Osborne, who came down and murdered a man at the Finsbury Park Mosque, saying he wanted to kill Corbyn and Sadiq Khan. You have all this stuff, and you're fucking moaning about having a milkshake thrown at you. I mean, and people are going, oh, this is a terrible state of our politics. And I've got nothing else to say about any of those things. Seriously, I mean, I tend to kind of go for well-explained, grown-up debate on this show as best we can. But I really can't think of anything to say to these people other than just shut up and go away. You've got nothing to say.
Well, I'm talking about films, and I'm thinking about analogies. Yeah. And, I'm terrible. The Spike Lee film, where it was really hot.
Hmm.
Fight the what
yeah, from, do the right thing.
Do the right thing. If you remember, Samuel L. Jackson was just doing some sort of monologue. He was on pirate radio and he was doing a monologue. Yeah. And at the end, he said, "Calm the fuck down," because I think people are getting. It's almost like football teams now, and I'm seeing people who are out of their minds about Ramonas and Brexit and. I'm a Ramona and you're a Brexit, you're a traitor and you... Calm the F down. Take a chill pill. It's going too far now. I saw a clip where Femi, who's brilliant, he's a Remainer and he's made some really good points and has actually tackled Farage on a lot of what he says and beaten him to the punch. But Femi was there while pretty people were queuing up to go on a Brexit march. And the abuse he got, people were throwing things on him, calling him a traitor, and calm down. Take a chill pill. This is going too far now. Stop going on about this, that, Remain, or whatever. Just leave it. It's out. It was always, 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 always going to end up this way. Mm. And if you did thought otherwise, think again. Okay, it's not going to happen, and the establishment won't let it happen. They won't let it happen, and you got to get used to it. The establishment's always been against. If they don't like something, they'll tug it.
Mm.
That's what they do.
Well, actually, I'll come back to that a little bit later on in a subject when I'm going to talk about the need to kind of engage in the honesty of power and how that we have to try and, you know, take control of things, but that this is going to be really, really hard work. But what I would add to what you say there, Dave, is that one of the things that most annoys me about the EU referendum is the way anyone really pretends like it's going to have any real effect on their material life. And what I mean by that is you're not going to, the people who are going to do well from this, people who are going to get even richer than they already are from Brexit, are your Rees-Moggs and people like that, you know, with their business interests. It's not you and me. It's not, if someone down the road from you, as a drunk bloke who was yelling at me on the train on Sunday morning was going on about how he voted to leave, I don't care. You're not going to get anything out of it, okay? You're still going to be halfway down a bottle of White Lightning at 10 to 12 on a Sunday morning, as you were then. Next week, the week after. If we leave the EU tomorrow, you'll still be a pisshead. Because you have the problems you have in life, and none of that is going to be solved by the European Union. Has fuck all to do with your life and never has.
Except
for those of us who are trade unionists who have better laws that we can protect our workers with within the EU than we presently have in the British government. And that's always been that way because under Thatcher, she waged a war against the working class and a war against trade unions and decimated us. And no one, with the exception of the present Labour Party, are pledging to bring any of those powers back to working class people. Sorry, go ahead.
No. And this is, I absolutely concur. So what I would say to people, whether you're a Remainer and you're outraged, democracy, sovereignty, listen, you were told something that wasn't true. Welcome to an ethnic minority who's lived here for 40 years.
Yeah.
Where people are marginalised and were promised things pre-election and post-election, we've always got a kick in the nuts. You got a kick in the nuts, whatever you voted for. And you've always got a kick in the nuts for what you voted for. It's just that someone's put paraffin in there and then people have gone out of their fucking minds. What's the matter with you? It's always been happening in this country and in America and the Western civilization where you're promised something and it's not going to happen because you were promised something that because of reasons that you had no control over. And you're going to get it again. And you're going to get it again. And you're going to get it again. I'm hoping times change and there's a generation of people coming in and want to change things and don't have the history that I have. But you got a kick in the nuts by the establishment. Welcome to the real world, middle class. John?
Yeah, no, I quite agree, mate. And also, I mean, there's so much to say about Brexit. I know we haven't actually done the show, but, you know, I have a number of mixed feelings about it. I was, you know, obviously I voted Remain for some of the reasons that I've already pointed out to you, but of course also because the Leave campaign, there may be other arguments for Leave, but those arguments were never on the table. The Leave campaign was a wholly racist and xenophobic campaign run by incredibly rich people who never account for their actions in the world of politics or wider. So I was never going to support that. However, it's also... It's got so run around and twisted because people keep saying, well, this is what I voted for. But it isn't, because you can't tell me you voted for Leave when you... Did you specifically vote for a no-deal Leave? Because that wasn't on my form. Did you vote for a Leave with a deal, a Norway-style plus option? You know, people are making this up. And I don't believe they're that stupid. I honestly think most people know perfectly well that that's what happened there. And to kind of, I mean, I think the whole thing was run incredibly badly. I blame David Cameron for all of it. Absolutely. And plenty of people since, but mainly him. And actually, I've got to say this, and I'm going to come to this later on perhaps, but we'll cover it now. So much of the politics of today, again, you know, the kind of centrist types of, and no, I haven't defined a centrist, but I'll define one later on the show. I haven't got time now. The ideas of, you know, always isn't about the politics of one side against the other. This is the politics of what works. We've just seen the Lib Dems, and even I think the Greens the other day, refused to side up with Labour. So they ended up getting another conservative politician who is kicking the shit out of the area that he's in. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the area off the top of my head, but that happened the other day. The Lib Dems and their like, we know what they did in power. We know what Nick Clegg's gone on to do, secret little shit, and the middle class types that they represent, which is fine. The middle class can have a political party. I'm fine with that, so long as we working class can have one too, and that's called the Labour Party. They are the only ones who are engaging with any of this situation with any level of seriousness, which is why they're not making you any promises. Because, as you've just pointed out, Dave, there's no promises to make. Everyone else around there has lied to you. Labour haven't kicked you in the balls. They're the only people who've actually been honest with you and gone, yeah, actually, it ain't that easy. It's really not that simple, and you're not going to solve it within 2 years. 2 years is nothing, people. It's nothing for an issue like this. This is massive. And you can't tell me that you voted for this, that, the other, because that wasn't on the form. The form said in or out. Didn't say how. Didn't say when, didn't say where. It just said in or out. So you, bullshit, man. You can't tell me that that's what you voted for, among other things. Anyway.
But just quickly, I'm going to put things into perspective and carry on in there. And it's not long. We're having all the marches and Brexit debates, referendums, Brexit, Remain, I want, whatever. Where are the referendums and the outcry? This is how the world has gone mad, this country in particular. And I'm getting angry now, John. Where is our referendums and our demos and our outrage at the Honda and British Steel workers?
Yeah, amen.
What planet are we on? Those poor people, their jobs are gone. John?
Yeah, like, I agree. I mean, look, I've been writing this show today. It's been my day off. So I've been online most of the day, which is why my brain is completely fried and I'm incapable of connecting to other human beings. That and my strange emotions. But sorry, jokes aside, I've watched this story change literally today. I've watched British Steel go under today. It's appalling. It's shocking. You're talking about people's livelihoods just crumbling before our very eyes. And a government system, and I'm going to talk about the actual system of government we have in power at the moment, which is run from Margaret Thatcher through Major, Blair, Brown, Cameron, up to now. It's a system that will not allow the ability to save this because they will not renationalise. They'll nationalise banks when they go tits in the air and plunge more money than any of us will ever see straight down the toilet. Then they'll give them a bailout and they'll spunk that up the wall as well. And then they'll give them another bailout to make sure they don't go under. But they will not bail out or help working people. And I'm afraid that, you know, again, it's a bit like what I'm talking about with fascism tonight. Well, at the point of what I was saying then, I'm glad you brought this up because I'm not going to say a lot about the steel because I haven't researched everything, but I can see, you know, we can see what we can see from here. It's about drawing a line now. You know, what are you willing to do? The Lib Dems and the kind of people they represent and whoever it is at change.org thinks they're representing, they don't care. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They're quite nice in some ways because they're not, you know, your typical old-fashioned knuckle-dragging homophobes and racists, but they are pretty much the same thing because if that black gay person happens to be working in British Steel right now, they couldn't give a shit about their fate. So, you know, actions speak louder than words. And I agree with you, Dave. It's time that we drew lines on this because it's just to say, you know, I know which side you and I are on, and I know I can have some faith in that, and I know which side the people around me are on. But to just let workers get caned by situations which are completely beyond their control, it's not their fault. You know, that company made a profit last year, didn't it? And let the government just go, no, sorry, we can't nationalise you or renationalise you. We can't help you out in this sense. It's just not a possibility. Yeah, and they're right. From their viewpoint, from their manner of doing politics, it isn't possible, which is why I advocate changing the political system.
Well, John, and one of the excuses, and this is how crazy we've become, certainly since austerity, the excuses was adjudicated judicially because it would be deemed, and get this, if they renationalised British Steel, it would be deemed as unlawful. Tell me how mad that is.
Yeah, I know. It's unlawful to protect people. British citizens. Not that I give a shit about national citizenship, anyway.
Well, forget them anyway, John. Let's just do a march for sovereignty.
Yeah? Yeah, okay.
Go on to the UN report, because this is interesting, John. Go on.
Okay. I'll do that one next, then I'll come back to the Italian Union thing. So the Italian Union thing is going to be a positive story, so we'll just do another one in the usual type that I'm used to. Today we became aware of a report on extreme poverty and human rights in the UK. It was a UN report with some very important information not normally discussed in relation to this country, and that is of human rights abuses inherent in the poverty sustaining of austerity. Professor Philip Alston, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, apologies if I'm wrong, at the UN found that austerity has led to, among other things, the following. 20% of the population have suffered economic impoverishment, including, in his words, the, quote, systematic disadvantage inflicted by current policies on women as well as children, unquote. One-fifth of the population, that's 14 million people to you and me, live in poverty. 1.5 million of that have experienced destitution in 2017. Most of the information from this report came was found between sort of November and December of last year. Increases have been seen in food banks and increases have been seen in homelessness. Accommodation changes have led to tens of thousands of poor families living far from their jobs, schools and community support. 2010 austerity policies continue largely unabated, quote, despite the tragic social consequences, end quote. Close to 40% of children are predicted at this rate to live in poverty by 2021. The legal system has been decimated and we've seen lowering life expectancy for certain sectors of society. Again, there's a quote from the report. There's a quote from the report that has again been tweeted by Labour MP Laura Piddock. I think we're going to get on well with her. She seems to be tweeting the right stuff. And she quoted this this line directly from the summary of this report. Quote, "The bottom line is that much of the glue that held British society together since the Second World War has been deliberately removed and replaced with a harsh and uncaring ethos." Unquote. I would remind listeners, before we carry on, that this removal has taken place since 2010 via Conservative / Lib Dem and now fully Conservative governments. It has not taken place via Labour. They haven't done it to you. They did plenty to you under New Labour. We'll come back to that in a minute. It hasn't been done by the EU. It hasn't been done by the nameless, faceless bureaucrats of Brussels. It has been done by people that many of you were fucking dumb enough to elect to positions of power. Okay? So just a little reminder on that one. Last year, the professor we mentioned here had commented that the UK austerity system was, in his view, misogynistic. This week, Human Rights Watch have also published research into food poverty and the damage sustained by women and children too. Stephanie Hancock appeared on BBC Radio 4 Woman's Hour to discuss the report, starting with the extent of food poverty for women and children in the UK. She mentioned some of the following. 10 years ago, the Tussle Trust, which many of us know in this country, but for those our international listeners, they are the organisation that run food banks around the country. The Tussle Trust would distribute 26,000 emergency food parcels a year 10 years ago, and today it hands out 1.3 million. They spent much time researching on the ground at food banks and spoke mostly to women of Human Rights Watch in order to come up with this report. Welfare payment changes, that's cuts to you and me, has had a great and devastating effect over the last few years. The UK government has frozen benefits for the last 4 years. This is supposedly going to be lifted next year, but who knows? And a cap no matter your personal circumstances. There's a cap on benefits no matter what personal circumstances you have. One result has been families not having enough money for food, and by the nature of family organising, this can still express practically as a war on women. Single mums are always more adversely affected, as any household with one earner is going to do less well than one with two. Government spending has been cut by 44%, and there is no reason for anyone to be going hungry in the UK. That was certainly the viewpoint of the Human Rights Watch and Stephanie, who done this one. The organisation want the government to look at how they have rolled out austerity and address the unfairness of women and children bearing the brunt of the cuts. Ask yourself if welfare deserves such extreme cuts, especially compared to others areas of government spending, is what they've actually stated to the government. This is a human rights issue because under various treaties the UK has signed up to, there is a provision for, quote, adequate standard of living, unquote, and that is contained within that is the right to food. This is a promise to adequate standard of living, and by ripping away the safety net, the UK government fails in this promise. So this is human rights violations by the British government on British people who are too poor and too vulnerable to fight back. Dave.
Yeah, so, John, a couple of things that I've noticed over this whole Brexit thing. We haven't done any other business in the Houses of Parliament and the House of Commons. It's one subject came up literally over the last few months, but the government, I haven't done any business on anything in the UK. When they did, in the last couple of days, they had a debate on the UN report. That's 14 MPs turned up. 14. Okay. So the UN report said 14 million children living in poverty. So that's one MP per million turned up for a debate. But yet everyone turns up for the Brexit, and I think it was four for the MP's expenses, wasn't it? That's a terrible indictment. And I'll say it again. The Houses of Commons recently, over the last few months, haven't done anything apart from Brexit, bar one, and there was the debate on the UN poverty report. Amber Rudd is going to appeal that decision. And I don't know how. My view is 5 or 6 years ago, she probably would have not done anything, but it's because social media and people are much more conscious, or it's affected someone, or it's affected someone you know. She's had to come out and say that. What that appeal looks like, I don't know. And maybe she's just saying it because she had to.
Mm.
Because at the moment, one political party, whether it be Brexit, you name it, I'm telling you now, one political party is so... is on the verge of actually collapsing, just wiping itself out. It's eating itself. But yeah, 14 MPs, John. 14 yeah. MPs. That's 1 million per MP speaking about poverty, children in poverty in the UK. Bear in mind, again, we haven't done any UK business in the House of Commons for several months now. No one is running the country.
Yeah, that's a really good point to make, and another reason why ultimately I couldn't give two shits about Brexit, because we all care about democracy, this, that, the other, but democracy don't mean shit when you're starving. As a Mannix once wrote a great song called Freedom of Speech Won't Feed My Children, and that's a sentiment that I think is very, very apt. The British Parliament, as you say, not actually covering proper issues like this and debating who should be the leader and who should snuggle their way into leadership outside of Theresa May, once she snuggled her way into it and then, you know, eventually scraped over an election by doing a deal that cost more public money that she had to give to a fanatical psychotic party from Northern Ireland. These are the things that we should be concerned with, but unfortunately this is the mindset of so many places where so much of the present British not just British, but let's talk about that for now. The present British culture is one of, well, there's not really anything we can do about this. We're not going to do anything about it. So instead, we're going to whine about migrants. We're going to talk about the end of Game of Thrones. We're going to talk about some story we heard about a migrant kidnapping a child, even though we can't name the migrant. We can't name the child. What the fuck, people? What is wrong with you? And it is you, it's not me. So I'm going to boldly state that one. And then, see, in a minute, I'm going to give you a story that talks about a lot of internationalism and the kind of things that are possible, that we are capable of. But, you know, if there's one thing I've learned, unfortunately, is you can't make people care. I wouldn't care less right now about Brexit. I just think it's something. Do you know what? It's delayed until October of the 31st, as far as the removal deal is done. Fine, do that. Stick it all the way on the back burner there, because it doesn't deserve to be on the front. It's not important enough. Stick that on the back burner, and let's get on with all the stuff that you and I have talked about tonight, plus plenty of other things. That's what government should be doing. That's what opposition should be holding them to account on. And I think the opposition's doing quite well, but they just get fobbed off with non-answers. You know, it's always... I had to laugh to myself today when I was in the gym, and there was... Prime Minister's Question Time came on at midday, and it just said... the headline underneath on Sky News they had on in the gym said, Theresa May answers MP's questions. I went, yes, really? Come on, how fucking delusional are you? I'm getting a little bit lost here in what I'm trying to say. I think you understand what I'm trying to say, Dave, because you're used to my going on like a lunatic. But for the sake of the listeners, let's bring a little more structure back to it. Go on.
As I said, there's things coming out, and there was a time when me and Just Jim used to do a show, as I mentioned last week, 4 or 5 years ago. This stuff never came out. You know, there were some weeks it wasn't much to talk about socially, because it was just something that we swallowed. We just got on with it. You know, this poverty issue was always there. But because of social media and the younger generation coming through and questioning politics, questioning decisions, questioning world in the work and poverty at work, questioning why are we bombing, you know, all the stuff that we're talking about. So it's turned on its head, John. And maybe it's because we've got a good opposition. Maybe it's because there's so much stuff coming out and social media is playing a huge part in us recognising things that we never normally would say anything about. We just put up with it. We've been doing it for years. The establishment's always turned us over.
I think there is a degree of that, but more importantly, I think we need to examine how it is that we got here. And I think there tends to be, as far as resistance is concerned, real, and I don't like to use the word resistance because it sounds wanky, but you know what I mean. To kind of an alternative, a fight back. And we tend to look at a lot of social movements, for instance, Occupy is what I'm thinking of. We tend to look at that as being, having a beginning, a middle, and an end within the time that it existed in the streets when it was an active thing. And therefore judging it a failure because we didn't overthrow, the 1%. And of actions or whatever. But I don't think that, and I'm not just saying because it adheres to my politics, I think that is a very one-dimensional way of looking at these things. Because part of what Occupy did and part of what it was there for is the kind of thing to tell us what is possible. Another world is possible. Another method of doing things possible. And I'm sure part of that has led to the Corbyn phenomenon. You know, it's not just that, but you know, among other things, it's one of the things that's led to us having different options, and also young people not accepting it. I mean, I never get tired of talking about this, but I'm sure I mentioned before that I realised one time when I was at a union event and the Deliveroo kids were there. I'm an old geezer. That's why I'm calling you kids. Right? So, but and it was very apparent that they had organised completely along trade union principles and practical ideas without any help from any of the big unions, without any, they've just gone, this is a situation we face. And one of the benefits of them being, you know, well-educated, because being well-educated is never a bad thing, folks. It's better to discard education that you don't need than it is to need what you haven't got. And they're these working class kids who are going, yeah, actually that's where we need to be. This is what we need to do. So there is hope, and that's where it comes from. Is it small scale? Yeah. Shit, yeah, it's small scale. It's always got, for a long time, it's going to be there. And I'm going to talk about that as part of something else in a minute. But it doesn't mean that it isn't important. It doesn't mean that it didn't mean something. So if you picked up that beer bottle, Dave, you might want to come back in and have a chat.
No, I was just going to... No, because I'm losing it now. That's why. Because I lost it because you mentioned the big union. So I'm really surprised because I ceased to become a Labour Party member in 1996 when Clause 4 was supported by the big trade unions. And the question I say to myself now, and these are how times has changed, John, and it's a good thing. If we still had Clause 4 in the Labour Party and it came up for vote today, that is, forget it, it's never going to happen. But I sometimes question why those big unions did that. I've looked at so many documentaries, and I've looked at the... we lost, the big unions lost the link to working class for a long time with centrist New Labour. Mm. Because we, and I say we because we're trade unions as well, we had a lot of hope on Tony Blair and, you know, but that Clause 4, that was wrong then, and it's wrong now. I became a Labour Party member again several years ago because it went back to its what it should be. But 1996 was a bad time if you were a real working class Labour person. And listen, I think some Tory party leaders were very centrist. I don't think they were that extreme. I think for a long time the Conservative Party had been very centre. I think Cameron, before Nigel came and messed them all up, I think when he was talking about big society and that, because he thought he was Blair Mark too. Mm. But again, a very centrist Conservative Party. As I said, they've always been a fag paper away from New Labour. But that Clause 4, the question remains, if we still had it in the Labour Party and it went for a vote now, forget it. Forget it. But the big unions, I think they failed us politically for years. Many years. I think politically we're a lot more clued on now, especially the young people. But I don't think they were that politically, you know. I think they were very liberal, actually, for many years, big unions.
Yeah, they were also... I think that they saw what was in front of them and they didn't want to lose that connection to the Labour Party. Now, some of them, you could argue, perhaps had it in mind of, you know, they could see. I mean, well, if anyone can say they predicted where we are today, I would fail. I'd have a little bit of trouble, a little bit of cynical trouble believing that is really the case. But you could argue that. I mean, I do remember one year time seeing Tony Benn on stage, and someone asked him, you know, it was around the time of the Iraq War and everything, like, why are you still in the Labour Party? Do you feel like it's not, you know, centering on you? And he said, well, and then he went for a history of the Labour Party. He said, I've been through many dark times in the Labour Party. You know, I've been beaten in my attempt to become leader. I've seen the SDP nearly tear us apart. I've even seen Ramsay MacDonald knacker the party out. But you stick with it. So I suspect maybe some of the unions thought, we'll stick with this big party. Because another thing you got to remember, Dave, I mean, I'm sure you've seen as much as I have, you get these people who very enthusiastically want to create some political party called something like the Trade Unionist Socialist Blokes from Down the Road Party, who love, you know, love socialism, etc., etc. And then, you know, they come in election, they come behind the bloke who's an Elvis impersonator. You know, they don't get anywhere. It's a shitty idea. It's, well, really stupid.
I remember one general secretary telling me about probably 10 years ago, saying that it was an election in Leeds or somewhere like that, and it was a socialist party, and he thought it was funny. I didn't find it funny. Very left, but it talked about renationalisation and the NHS and that. And that he thought it was funny that this socialist party who went for election was beaten by a party called Elvis Left the Building, and he thought it was funny.
Yeah, I actually know the bloke you're talking about. I was at one of those meetings.
Yeah, and I just found it bizarre for a general secretary to say that, because I don't think he'd say it now. I don't think he'd say it now, but I'll say it again. I think big trade unions, and that's why I like United Voices of the World, because when we interviewed Claudia on here, it kind of got, wow, they're actually representing marginal people, the service industry people and dancers,
even more so now, yeah, because they're working with in the sex industry, so yeah, even more so.
Yeah, they're representing people, and I like that, because I like the passion. I like that, and they're not shrouded in rules, and, you know, they're not shrouded in they're not they're flexible. I think trade unions aren't flexible in that they're too rigid in their own politics. That makes any sense. And it turns young people off.
It makes perfect sense, but also I think too many of them haven't recovered from the battering of the 80s, where the main thing that happened, as we've talked about before, and I think we've mentioned tonight, is it changed the idea of what was politically possible. And in a minute, I'm going to come to my little piece I want to say about changing what is politically possible. But that's what it is. You can call it the Overton window and call it whatever you want to, but that's what it's about. And too many of them just rolled over and accepted it, which is not right. But you can also understand, because again, I remember being around that time, and the kind of people who were advocating for us to, you know, the fucking pathetic twits like the SWP wanted a general strike every other week, you know, and it wasn't going to happen. We didn't have those kind of numbers of people who are connected to what we do. Numbers of trade unions were going down at the time. Now they've gone up, and we need to, I think what we need to do is admit where we're wrong, because I think as Claudia pointed out to us, you know, when I asked her the question, just off the cuff, like, why would you like to join a bigger union? She said, no, why? What are the good are they going to do for us? She's absolutely right. We can learn more from them. All of us, not just trade unions, but working people in general, we can learn a lot more from how that
goes. Yeah, unions need to get back to, forget all these rules, let's collectively bargain. I agree that unions need to be much more educated and be able to negotiate and avoid trade union avoidance. And it's not about going out on strike. I always say, look, go out for the right reasons, but don't lose money for the wrong ones. And it's about the power of negotiation and, you know, and collective bargaining. Some of these people who hate unions, you've got to see these trade union officials when they negotiate. They're fantastic. They could turn Brexit on its head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we get it sorted.
Yeah, but so it's not all about committees and rules and stuff like that.
Sandwiches
and, you know, things like that, and Harold Wilson, I think Harold Wilson, the quote Harold Wilson inviting trade union leaders to the number 10 and having a beer and a sandwich. I hate that. That's not true. That's not true.
But again, this goes back to one of the other things, just before we move on, because we've only got 15 minutes and I've got a couple of things to cover, is that it's the hatred. One of the other things that came up in that time is the hatred of the left. And that's what Margaret Thatcher gave the world, and the world of politics, among other things. And that's what Blair had, and that's what anyone who ever took his side really had to deal with. Hatred of working class and a hatred of the left. We have been marginalised and pilloried. And it's one of the things why I say to people now, I'm glad to be in the position I'm in now, because now I can't just say that I believe in a bunch of shit. I can't claim I believe in socialism or things like that, because now I have to prove it. Now, when 10, 15 years ago, when I said that, everyone just went, oh, really? You know, 10, 15 years ago, if I was wearing my Labour Party T-shirt on the train, nobody would have shouted at me. It would have been a very boring train journey. Whereas now, it's you know it's riling people up. If a T-shirt triggers you, you know you're doing something right.
You know, John, no one could ever say that what you do is... I think you've always tackled it, John, even when it wasn't trendy.
No, I don't mean like that. I just mean like now you have to, it's demanded of you. And I think this is a good, responsible thing. It is demanded of us to better justify what we think and believe in, because we are a threat to the status quo, which we must change. And that's why people are getting, when people are scared of the likes of, when the establishment, if you want to call it that, is scared of the likes of you and me, we're doing the right thing. If they're not, I think that we're not doing enough.
Yeah, absolutely. We beat this thing to death, John, and I'm happy to always do it. Because I want to get the Alabama Free tribute out of the way. But I saw this article about the trade union in Italy boycotting the loading of a Saudi bound ship. John?
Yes. Italian workers in the port city of Genoa refused to load two generators on board the Bahre Yanbu vessel last Monday, saying that the weapons on this Saudi ship contravened a United Nations treaty and might be used against civilians in Yemen. In a statement, union leaders said that they would, quote, not be complicit in what is happening in Yemen, unquote. That was referring to the brutal war that is being fed by Saudi Arabia, where much of the population has suffered from famine and attack from Saudi allies, with weapons provided directly by Saudi Arabia, quite often via the UK and France. Human rights activists and anti-war protesters have also been present at the port to support the workers. The ships are said to have weapon consignments aboard, but specifically the union refuses to load two electricity generators for their use. Earlier this month, the vessel loaded arms in the Belgian city of Antwerp, but was prevented from picking up another consignment of weapons in the French port of La Havre. That's Havre. A massive shout out to my French friends, an apology because I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, but La Havre. Following protests by humanitarian groups after the investigative website Disclose published leaked documents that showed Saudi Arabia was using French weapons, including tanks and laser-guided missile systems, against civilians in Yemen's war. President Macron eventually admitted that the weapons were being used in the Yemeni war, but said some crap about only within Saudi Arabia's border. I don't have a fucking clue what he means by that, but anyway. It's always good to highlight stories like this because, as me and David discussed this evening, they show the power of a union, and it helps demolish the myth that working class people do not have internationalist ideals these days. Plus, coming from Italy, where the mainstream focus right now is on an awful fascist scumbag of a leader and his attacks on migrants, refugees and their supporters, it's really great to see an example of internationalism in action. It's a great story. I suggest you go and check out more of it rather than just listen to what I have to say. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, well, you know... I've always had a problem with the Saudi connection. I didn't like John Major's policies, his party's policies. I didn't mind John Major. I thought, I'm another centrist, very pro-Europe. But I do remember him doing a multi-billion pound deal after the Gulf War in 1991. With Saudi Arabia, and it made headline news, and I just thought that it was wrong. For some, I just think it's wrong. I don't think we should be. I don't think it's a great export. I think it's trouble. I think in my lifetime, the Gulf War, which was the second conflict in my lifetime, Falklands was the other one. And my family was in the armed services. And I just think about the people they send there and the people that die, that get killed. Young people, kids, babies. And I thought it was a bad, I was 20-something. And I thought as a society, that's not nothing to shout about, to sell, we've done a deal for £1 billion for the Saudi Arabia for all armed aeroplanes and things like that. We've got to be looking at this. When are we going to change things, these foreign policies? I know liberal Democrats say the left or the snowflakes always go on about foreign policy. Well, why not? It's killing people.
Yeah,
it's not nothing to shout. We should be ashamed of that.
We should be, but also more importantly, I think as the example we've just talked about, the Italian unions, this idea that everyday people don't care about foreign policy. Now, okay, if you want a wider part of the population, and if you talk about, for instance, Britain and America, yeah, they probably, those are the big population, so they probably don't. But a lot of us do. And so this idea of putting everyone into a bracket of saying, no, you don't care, it doesn't matter, it bloody does matter. These, like you say, I don't want to be involved in this. And, I don't even like the manufacturing of weapons. I think it's something, I'm not keen on putting people out of work, but frankly, when people who work in weapons manufacturing come and say to me, I could lose my job. Well, your job is staggeringly immoral anyway, so maybe you should do something better.
I think we become so complacent as a society in America and the UK, in that when there's something going off somewhere, we all are quite content in not having the debate if we have the debate when.
Yeah, well, we shut
it's going to happen
too,
whether we like it or not, and I think that's wrong. If we can debate a stupid referendum for no good, but for the few, we can have debates on foreign policy, big debates, marches, and all sorts, and then let's have the milkshake thing, and come on,
load up on milkshakes, people. Don't be dissuaded about that. That's the very least that you can cover these scumfucks. And
now listen, you mentioned Alabama 3, and I'm absolutely fascinated by the group anyway, but I wasn't sure the name, but I want to play one of their songs.
Okay,
just after your tribute, John, take it away.
Okay, so I just want to say a quick tribute today to the Reverend Dwayne Love. He was known to those who knew him well as Jake Black, but to us music fans, he was the very Reverend of the band Alabama 3, and he apparently died yesterday. His band brought me and some of my loved ones a great deal of joy over the years, but more specifically, he was a strong supporter of trade unions and also an organization called Mojo, who are the Miscarriages of Justice organization. They actually had a presenter at one of their shows one time I went to, and he talked about how he had been in prison for a miscarriage of justice, and then when he was let out of prison, he didn't really have any support mechanism. So if you think about people, for instance, who are on parole and stuff like that, not that I'm saying it's great to be on parole, but you do have the basis of a structure and a support mechanism. For people who are released from jail, no matter how long they've been, if they don't have that support mechanism, they just let out. Just, go and get on with it. Because, hey, miscarriage of justice, out you go. So they had somebody from that organisation. It's very important work that they do, and I advocate them a lot. But Mr Black was also a very strong supporter of trade unions, and he supported the striking train strike workers from a few years back. He supported all of them, basically. There's a very interesting video from about 9 years ago online with him speaking. He's from Glasgow originally. I think he was the son of a trade unionist, among other things. And he was talking about, again, some of the stuff we talk about on this show, like the weakening of the unions, the weakening of working class, all that kind of stuff, and what that had led us to. He was a very, very committed man. He also, he and a lot of the other band, what was interesting is they had a bit of a struggle with that song being on The Sopranos, because while they got $40,000 for it, which they're obviously very happy to a good living to make, they disliked it because it praised villains, a show that praised villains as far as they saw it, which they were not in favour of. But also because they were in the waste management sector, Reverend Dwayne Love felt that they unfairly made a lot out of being union busters, that kind of stuff, which is, I mean, it's only a TV program, but still, I thought it was a very good point that he had. But, you know, he was down for the real people. He was down for those of us who suffered and were excluded from society. And he wanted his music and of that band to help people, especially young people, realize that they could make music based on their lives. So he will be very much missed, I think. So I don't know if you want to play a tune on the way out to do you, Dave?
I did check them out when you mentioned it, but I didn't know, because I got into them because of the theme song from Sopranos, and yes, it's probably something they're not too proud about, but it is one of the most famous programs ever.
Yeah.
In that it doesn't, it's not Dallas or anything like that. It's very brutal, but it's very funny. It's very realistic. It deals with all sorts of things from racism and so forth. But that's
not. It's not as good as The Wire, though.
No, The Wire is very good, actually. I still keep winding up my right wing friends saying that Idris Elba is going to be the new James Bond. It drives them nuts.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, John, thanks very much. As I said, great group, and I will be doing a more investigative analysis of this group, because I always thought they were different anyway. I just always thought they were different.
Yeah, they're good fun life. If you like, just a couple of recommendations.
Sure.
Firstly, Exile on Cold Harbor Lane, which was their debut album, I believe. That's very good. There's another album of theirs called Outlaw, and Power in the Blood was another one. All three of those are decent. They're worth listening to. I like those records. There's various live stuff you can get online. Also, for recommendation, can I just say to people, if you're interested in the stuff we're talking about, the UN report, you can find it at undocs.org, and there's a whole... I'm sure it'll be on the homepage. Not going to read you the whole website address, because that just sounds weird. And Woman's Hour on BBC Radio 4 today was the one where Stephanie Peacock was on Stephanie Hancock was on talking about the Human Rights Watch report. I recommend you listen to them, because I've only covered it briefly for the sake of the show. Now, I did want to do a little thing again this week about what we mean by revolution, but we don't really have the time. I think what I'll do, if this is all right with you, Dave, is I will record this and upload it to my SoundCloud page, which is sort of connected to this show. It's where a lot of interviews we don't have time to play all of, or some of the stuff I do when I'm out and about in the street, that's where I tend to load it up to. Usually unedited, because I'm utterly shit at editing material. And if anyone out there in the listening public to the All The Rage show can actually give me some guidance on how best to use things like Audacity, please do. The thing is, I can't watch videos on shit like that. Somebody has to show me how it works. So it's just one of those things. But then I can better edit the stuff that you listen to. But yeah, my SoundCloud page is designed to be an extra to what we do here, among other things that I do. So you can find it at John Bowd. It's all one word, JONBOUD, all at one word. You can find it there. Also, I just want to quick shout out to people before we leave, is for those of you who want to participate more in this, we don't get as much participation from listeners as I would like, so I'd just like to reiterate something quickly. The website for this show, for this station, is www.tracksfm.org, where I believe, Dave, can they send you emails directly? I know they can go in the chat room.
Well, yeah, you can. I must put the links up, but if you go to www.tracksfm.org, you go into the chat room, use any user, you can use an anonymous. You can email us at tracksfm@tracksfm.org. And if you come into the chat room, I'll give you the details to Skype in, and you can talk to John live. It's totally how you guys want to do it. I know we get a huge listenership on the replays or the podcasts on Hear This. I know you're in town, but if you want to join the party, you've got to get a ticket.
You do. Also, make sure you're very polite and kind to Dave, otherwise he won't pass the messages on to me. And that's not because he's nice to me, it's because he's nice to you, because if you fuck with me, I'll tear you to pieces. Okay, thanks a lot, Dave, and that's what we'll do for this week. But yeah, like I say, if you want to hear the piece on a revolution, SoundCloud, John Bowd, I will record that probably in about 10 minutes' time and upload it.
John,
thanks.
Thanks very much.
On the Rage with John Bowd. On www.tracksfm.org.
Cheers, John. Down.